Aquí de lunes a jueves.
The Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
You're on, Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Valentine's Day. A day that can hold more dread and more promise than any on the calendar. No? It's a minefield sprinkled with claymores and bouncing Bettys and littered with shattered and bleeding hearts. It's fraught with anxiety for everyone on this side of the dirt. If you're uninvolved, you may feel like a pariah. Everyone else in the world is getting and giving chocolates and flowers and ridiculous plush satin crimson greeting cards thick enough to line Dracula's coffin. But if your February 14 comes and goes without so much as a Hershey's kiss, you feel like 8 cents worth of hammered shit. Do women without a Valentine feel it more severely? Well, guys are supposed to not give a shit about such stuff, but we do. Who wants to be sitting alone on the dock when everybody else sails off on the love boat? Valentine's Day is another one of those manufactured holidays designed to sell candy and flowers and engagement rings. But there's collateral damage. It's a Rubicon for relationships. A day when girlfriends can draw a line in the sand and say to a boyfriend, "Where is this relationship going?" Don't you love those euphemisms? Chicks revel in them. All kinds of gradations and shading. Codes for levels of involvement. We're just friends means she has to hold her nose when you're in the room. We're dating. What does that mean? Probably that she's allowing him to pick up tabs at nice restaurants. My favorite is we're seeing each other. We're seeing each other, which is chick code for we're screwing. Some comic whose name I can't recall once said, "So we're seeing each other, are we? Then I guess that blind guy over there has himself a fucking eye dog." Saw a story on the news recently. A couple, newly engaged, so much in love. They had their engagement ring stolen by some crooked jeweler who was supposed to be cleaning it. They claimed it was worth 40 grand. Looked like 40 bucks worth of zircon to me. And the groom-to-be, I looked at this guy and I think, something doesn't pencil out here. This cat does not look like a $40,000 engagement ring purchaser. Nope, he's definitely got the zircon look. And then, the big reveal. The ring was a family heirloom from her family. And they gave it to him to give to her. What the fuck? She done got herself a knight in shining diapers. In the love wars, women have men hopelessly outgunned. Where you are in the battle is dependent on your station in life, age and status-wise. In the early skirmishes, females hold all the cards. They blossom and peak early. Many 18-year-old girls look like women. Most 18-year-old guys look like teenagers. And the girls just know more, instinctively. When we meet some chick that really, really lights our jets, we snap into an altered state, don't we? Our hearing and speech become impaired. That's because she just activated her jamming signals to shut down our ability to think, not just rationally, but at all. Getting her becomes more important than taking our next breath. And she sees that and even smells it off you. Next, she dials in her tractor beam. Presto, all extraneous stimuli becomes filtered out. You can see and hear only her. Then, she hotwires your ignition, throws the autopilot switch, and is now driving you. Females are infinitely better at nonverbal communication than men. Their sense of taste, smell, and hearing are far more acute than ours, and they use those senses to dull yours. Next, she's gonna short out your electrical system and rewire it her way. Hair tosses, leg crosses, eyebrow arches, plenty of teeth, adjusting the buckles on the ankle strap shoes, tugs on the mini skirt hem, arms behind her head to focus her points on you. And you are finished. It can happen that fast. When you come to your senses, it's too late. When you're thinking hot tub, she's thinking jean pool. When you're thinking pair of handcuffs, she's thinking pair of wedding rings. You're planning the next 5 hours, she's planning the rest of your life. What's the universal love song in guys' heads? Here's the medley women want to hear. Why do you think they call it the Bridal March? A march is a battle song, isn't it? Because when you hear it, the war is over, and she won. And no one goes unscathed in the love wars, do they? Everybody gets at least some shrapnel. Though it's the direct hits to the heart that heal slowly. Where do we even begin to examine love? It's the most dangerous four-letter word. It's safer to jump into bed with a cobra than another human being. And speaking of snakes, I once saw a stripper in Florida. She did her act with a snake slithering all over her body. She turned her back on the crowd, and when she faced us again, that snake had vanished. I wonder where he went. When somebody says, "I love you," if it's not echoed back, that love can flip to hate and resentment in a flash. Ah, that's another flavor of love, isn't it? The psycho love. See, there's always a sex component to the serial killer psychos, isn't there? Like Ed Gein, the inspiration for Silence of the Lambs. Ed loved the ladies so much, he just had to skin them and wear their hides. Imagine Ed on the red carpet. He'd give a ring of authenticity to that Oscar night question, "Who are you wearing?" Jeffrey Dahmer was a world-class sick love Lothario who dreamed up some fresh ways to play the game of romance. In one of his major conquests, he strapped an unconscious guy to a chair, gagged him, and put on some music to set the mood. Just as the guy was regaining awareness from the Mickey he'd been slipped, Jeff plugged in the Black and Decker and bored a 3/8 inch hole into the guy's skull. Next, he poured in that tried and true aphrodisiac, hydrochloric acid. Jeffrey figured that would turn the guy into his personal sex zombie. Love has got to be the leading motive for murder and suicide. And in marriage, you've got about a 50-50 shot of it working or ending in divorce. And that statistic is just for the actual legal divorces. There's no way to factor in all those married couples who are staying together until the kids are dead. Love can kill you. I watched a guy, his name was Bernard. He caught a terrible disease. The disease was named Debbie. I was working one of those shitty jobs in my so-called career, sitting in a fluorescent lit room with four or five other unfortunates. I can only now recall two of them, Bernard and Joan. Joan was kind of pointy. And Bernard was one of those guys who was in his early 20s, but looked like he was decades older. He kept his shoulders hunched, looked at the ground as he walked, and his neck sprouted from his chest. He had the posture of a vulture. Several times a day, Bernard's phone would ring. It was impossible not to eavesdrop, and it was free entertainment.
"Hi, Debbie. But I thought you liked the bracelet. Your wrist is green. Oh, my God. You really have a gold allergy? I guess it's refundable. Yeah, I'll stop on the store on my way home from work. What? But what if you're allergic to platinum, too? No, I'm not arguing with you, Deb. I'm just trying... Okay. Yeah, I'll pick you up at 8. Well, I don't think the car wash is open after 5. Oh, my dad is probably using his car tonight. I can't ask him to trade with me. I don't think he's going to take a cab. He won't want... All right, I'll ask him.
Then Bernie would slide open his desk drawer, and out would come a big-ass bottle of Maalox, and he'd chug it like it was beer. His head would retract an inch deeper into his shoulders. Pointy Joan would snicker and say something like, "Stop cracking the whip, Bernie. You show Debbie some respect." Over the months, Bernie's weight dropped, his Maalox consumption increased, and he began on mood-leveling drugs. He also developed several other syndromes, skin conditions, a facial tic, lower back pain. His body was screaming for relief from Debbie. Then, he and Debbie commenced a weekly regimen of couples therapy. Now there's a concept. The courtship phase is so monkey-fucked, you're in therapy before you're even married. People come up with the most inane fixes for their broken marriages, don't they? I knew a guy who lived in marital hell for years. His wife thought she was a mistress of the universe. She knew everything about everything, including real estate speculation. So as a last-ditch attempt to salvage their unworkable marriage, she talks him into buying another home. A home that was a big, big financial stretch. The house looked great, but it was actually a white elephant, a piece of shit built on some kind of toxic dump. He lost a fortune on it, and another fortune in the bitter divorce. But the sickest, most fucked up fix that you hear is this one.
"Let's have a baby. Maybe it will strengthen our marriage."
Oh, good. "Let's create a human life as an experiment, an 8-pound Band-Aid. We've already fucked up both our lives thus far with our foolish choices, and now let's produce somebody new and helpless and innocent and then burden him with our stupidity and baggage." What the fuck is wrong with people? Dick Masterson, whom you all know and love as America's wingman, has some mighty strong artillery in the love wars with his two stock questions. "Where'd you get those banging shoes?" And, "Tell me about your dad." I'd have to agree. Those are infinitely better ways to jumpstart a relationship than come here often. I'd like to add one to the Masterson repertoire, a question that I often ask women in my many years of singlehood. When I would meet a girl, I could usually tell in the first 90 seconds whether or not she'd been raised in a fractured family. They always had a certain haunted melancholia about them. It was unmistakable. And so I would sometimes ask, "How old were you when your parents divorced?" They thought I was psychic. All I really had was 20/20 vision. We all know lots of people whose parents were divorced. Know any of them who recommend the experience? Me neither. More on that later. There's an old saying, better alone than in bad company. And that's true. But in our 2x2 Valentine's Day culture, men and women will overlook any flaw or problem or red flag just as long as they're not alone. I recall seeing Whitney Houston on some TV show shortly after she was engaged to her husband, Bobby Brown, who ultimately punched her around. Whitney was sitting in the middle of her enormous Bel Air mansion. She was gorgeous, pointy, famous, rich, arguably, at that time, the biggest star in the world. And the host asks her, "So Whitney, you're a superstar. You can have any man you want. Why are you getting married?" And Whitney answered, with not a hint of sarcasm or irony, "I'm 30. It's time." Not, I met this guy I just can't live without. Just, it's time. And what about those stadium Jumbotron proposals? When will those cease? And what is the reasoning behind them? You take one of the most personal moments of your life and make it halftime grist for 60,000 drunken fans. If you're going to make them a witness to the proposal, why not live stream the wedding night? What is the idea behind those things? That with all those people watching, she can't say no because she'll look like a nasty bitch? A few years ago, some chick actually did say no. The look on the goofball suitor was priceless. I wonder how many of those chicks accept and then tell those guys to fuck off when they turn off the cameras. Love is a subject so volatile, so incendiary, so dangerous, so enormous, it's almost too much to tackle, even for the Take No Shit Dojo with all of our in-house and affiliated senseis. But we'll give it a shot. There are several hundred thousand words in English. But we have only one word for love, which is insufficient for a thing as complex and infinite as love. And as with any enigma, understanding can't even begin to happen until you break it down a little. They've got the wrong infographic for love. It's always a big red heart, isn't it? It should be a three-legged stool. Without those three legs, it cannot stand or endure. Those Greeks, you gotta love those Greeks. They figured this out thousands of years ago. They had three words for love. There were actually four, but the fourth one had a little bit of overlap, so we're gonna throw that one out. The three words were Eros, Philos, and Agape. Eros, of course, is the one that gets the most ink, right? And all its representations, the greatest of which are pointy chicks. Interesting how depictions of love almost never show a man, do they? It's always hearts and roses and a female silhouette. Then we have Philos. Shoulder to shoulder, brotherly love, friendship, battle buddies. Lastly, and the least understood and the rarest of the troika, Agape. The literal translation is love feast. The only two sources where agape is generously dispensed are mommy and God. It's unconditional love, love with a bottomless reservoir of forgiveness. And whether we know it or not, those are the three legs of that stool. We really need all three to make it through the long, strange trip we're on. We'll take a closer look at each a little later in the show. Getting married is one of the nuttiest and riskiest things we'll ever do. And the riskiness increases exponentially once you have a kid. Because marriage without kids is just dating with a contract. And once that contract is nullified, it's over. But if you have a kid with someone, that marriage is forever. No priest or rabbi or government official can declare it's over. As long as the parents and that kid are breathing, you are all connected. Love casualties are all around us, and they almost invariably screw themselves by making hurried or desperate choices. And even if you think you're fairly cautious and level-headed, any guy can be rendered an imbecile by chicks and their signal-jamming, mind-control tractor beams. In fact, I owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to the marvelous Tony Spumante, who snapped me out of a tractor beam trance. Regular dojo visitors know that Tony's wife and my girlfriend at that time, we'll just call her Victoria, were best friends. We had many a double date. And as time wore on, as with most relationships, girls like to know where it's going. They want to march that victory march in their white satin battle fatigues. Trouble was, we never really got along all that well. We didn't see eye to eye on many critical issues. She wasn't the most empathetic or caring of women. But she was pointy as hell. In fact, the entire relationship was predicated on her pointiness. My friends and family, they all knew we were wrong for each other. But they only hinted as gently as possible at the truth, which I absolutely refused to acknowledge, being in my early 20s and under the influence of a finely tuned tractor beam. One night, Tony, his wife Linda, Victoria, and I were at a very trendy Manhattan nightclub. There was a famous comedian playing the joint, and it was packed. Despite Tony duking the maitre d', a U.S. Grant, the best we could get was a table several rows back from the stage. This was not to Victoria's liking. She'd already had a couple of drinks, and she says something to the effect of, "If you two are so tough, why don't you bounce those hicks out of that stage side table?" We looked at her to see if she was kidding. She wasn't. I looked at Tony. He looked at me. His jaw set. Never a good sign. Linda grabbed Victoria by the hand and dragged her to the ladies' room. Tony sparked a cool. He put his elbows on the table and leaned across to me. "Larry, you thinking about marrying her?" "I don't know, Tony." "That would be the biggest asshole move of your fucking life. Wise the fuck up." Then he reached out with one hand. He pinched my cheek. When he let go, he gave me a little love tap. When wise guys do that, it's their demonstration of philos, brotherly love. Of course, if they kiss you, get your affairs in order. Tony had the balls to tell me, punctuated by a pinch and a playful slap, what others tried to, but never did so compellingly or eloquently. At that instant, the tractor beam was broken. I came to my senses. Victoria was soon history. At one time or another, we all need a Tony Spumante to save us from becoming a love casualty. And so now, we all hustle out to get our heart-shaped boxes of chocolate or long-stemmed roses or bracelets or rings. Stop and think. Are we getting any signals from those who really care that maybe our choice is a foolish one? Neither men nor women have any monopoly on temporary insanity while under the influence of love or lust. And often, it's the conflation of the two that leads us, if we're lucky, to an epiphany courtesy of the Tony in our lives, if we're fortunate enough to have one. An absent Tony, or a reasonable facsimile, if we really want to figure out the game and what's best to us, we have to go back to those crafty Greeks, because Eros really is only one leg of the love stool. Do you really need some pointy bitch to instigate a brawl for you over a not-so-great table in a nightclub? And long after the clubbing days are over, you're going to face hurdle after challenge after setback after crisis. And who do you want by your side in the trenches? I'll tell you who. Some chick who will kick off her pointy shoes, lace up her combat boots, and help you fight those battles. And then, when she does get to hear the soundtrack I mentioned earlier, this one, that's where you both better have some agape on reserve. Before I ever had a kid, this is the truth and nothing but, I thought having a kid would be like having a dog that could talk. I really did. I've had a couple of dogs, and I loved them like crazy, but I wouldn't die for them, or give them a kidney, or an eyeball, or work late so they could have a better brand of dog food. But when a baby comes along, mommy and daddy better have a sizable reservoir of agape. And if they don't, that kid is probably doomed. Prisons are filled with people who never knew their dads or any parent. Divorce is, without question, the most destructive force in society. Fuck the war on drugs. It's bullshit. It will never end because people will always find something to make themselves high. And too many government jobs depend on the sustenance of that so-called war. How about a war on divorce? How about attacking it from the preventative angle? Why the fuck don't high schools and colleges teach courses on helping people find the right partners? Nobody gets married with the intention of getting divorced, do they? It's always with the greatest of optimism. But probably most people know, going in, but choose to ignore friends, family, and their own inner voice. Not in California, but in some other states, they have a cooling-off period after auto purchases where you get a day or two to discover maybe you can't afford that Bentley Continental GT. And if you buy a gun in California, you have to wait 10 days before picking it up. But you can walk into any courthouse and say, "Marry us," and get hitched on the spot. Maybe there should be a cooling-off period for marriage. Or even better, how about a mandatory 3-month separation with zero contact after engagement? If, after that time, you still want each other more than ever, go for it. A cooling-off period for marriage would surely save a lot of love casualties. And so, my friends, as we sail into this Valentine's Day, don't look at the red satin hearts. Instead, check the legs on that stool. And for those of you traveling solamente, fear not. There's a cover for every pot. Just be sure he isn't some Casanova with a Black & Decker love toy. And until you find the perfect fit for you, you're saving a ton of Skrilla on chocolate and flowers. Hey, I gotta go get a box of chocolates for the pointy chick that got me. The people have spoken, and they love the idea of a take-no-shit tour, where we all meet in person with the leather chairs, the fireplace, and the Johnny Red. We'll wallow in our parallel world view, but it can't happen without those marvelous Patreonies. Why not join the Patreon Dojo and make yourself a part of Take No Shit history? Next up is a special bonus episode of my encounter with a home invader. It will be available only to brown belt level and above Patreons. This episode will be pistol hot, too hot for general distribution. Don't miss it. If you like what you hear, slide over to iTunes and throw us 5 stars and tell all your friends. Thanks for stopping by, my friends, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And remember, don't be a casualty of love. Take no shit.